Well, let's get started, although we're missing one panel. This is session 233, Supporting Special Needs Children and Young Adults in the Church. I am not Joe Geisner. He had a family emergency come up and was unable to be with us. The five members of the panelists are Charlene Durham, MS, University of Utah. Let me read the biographical information I've been given. Charlene Durham, MS, University of Utah, 30 years as an educator in schools, industry, and government, parent of four children, one with severe developmental disabilities. Our second panelist is Teresa Edmonds, who's a craft designer, blogger, perpetual young women's leader, and parent to an 18-month-old son with cerebral palsy. Teresa co-blogs about leading young women at beginningsnew.blogspot.com and blogs about motherhood and other creative endeavors at reesedixon.com. Jenny Grossman has spent her life learning about other cultures and religions and working as an advocate for children with disabilities. She holds a master's degree in both theology and marriage and family counseling. Her two major questions have always been, who is God, and what makes a happy, healthy family? These two questions led her to convert to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in 1984 and have been the themes of her writing. Her first work of fiction, Beneath the Surface, Covenant Books, 2000, dealt with the themes of religious hypocrisy and the insider-outsider social order of small towns. Must have lived somewhere in southern Utah or central Utah.
Any town will do.
Her second, Behind the Scenes, Covenant 2001, dealt with America's drug culture and its impact on children. Her most recent novel, Missing Pieces, Covenant 2009, was written after she and her husband spent 2 years in Turkey supported by her husband's Fulbright scholarship. While there, Jenny worked as a journalist and editor for an agency of the Turkish Prime Ministry. Her five-part newspaper series about the Zugma excavation won an International Journalism Award. Upon her return, she wrote Missing Pieces, Covenant 2009, a novel that takes place in Iraq and southeast Turkey, set amidst ancient history and the current conflicts in the Middle East. Jenny is passionate about education for women and is one of the founders of Tiny Pieces, an organization that supports female students in oppressed areas of the world. She now lives with her husband in Phoenix, Arizona. Amy Nelson is the mother of four children, including an 11-year-old with Asperger's syndrome and a 9-year-old son with autism. She often wears running shoes to church in place of heels. I have a relief society president in my ward that does the same thing. Since the birth of her fourth child, Heidi, some 21 years ago, the Elaine Potter Pearson, that must have been a typographical, has been a voice for disabled individuals in her community, state, nation, and world. Through the years, Elaine has done countless presentations on awareness, advocacy, and achievements. She was crowned the 2001 Miss Utah United States and touched many lives with her service platform of teaching stress management tools. Elaine is the author of Learning to Dance in the Rain, A Mother's Holistic Approach to Helping Her Children with Down Syndrome and Autism. Currently, she is preparing to go on national speaking tour to offer hope, help, and healing to families everywhere. And with that, we'll turn the time over to our panelists, and they will speak in that order, and if we have time left, we will entertain questions.
Thank you very much, John. This is a wonderful opportunity again to speak. A couple of years ago, I did give a paper in Sunstone more precisely about my son. Just to give a context, my son never reached the situation that he needed support in the church, but I would like a bit of time to address how to support the parents and the families of those with children with special needs. In context, my son, Daniel, was a third child, born when I was at the peak of my health and joy, and I was having such a great time in life and was really anticipating a wonderful experience with him. There were issues with the birth, but dealt with neonatal at the very beginning and took him away, examined everything looked fine, so The story was another healthy child. I'm sure he went through the same typical blessing that we do in the LDS Church. I don't remember it at all. But he appeared normal and things were going well. Until about 3 months, his 3 month checkup with the pediatrician, my mother had questions along the way and said, you know, Charmaine's really got to talk to her doctor, but we thought everything was fine. And then the doctor called me and said, well, his head size is small. And then we began to see there were developmental delays. And so for the next 3 months, it was a series of doctors and tests repeat, doctors and tests repeat for about 3 months. And the diagnosis that I kept getting was, your child is developmentally delayed. I said, I know, that's why I came to see you. So as we got to this point and dealing with my pediatrician, who was absolutely superb, and the question always comes up, what caused this? And he said, and it always, you know, you go through all of these issues, what caused this? Did I cause this? Did I do something? And I was actually training to run a marathon when I got pregnant, which is why I was in peak physical condition for myself, for my life. And I thought, and so since that time, I've decided I'm not going to train to run a marathon again, because I know what happens. You get pregnant and you have a child. So I don't run marathons anymore. So in terms of putting this then in a church context, where does it relate to the rest of the people around you? In deciding or trying to figure out what caused this, did I cause this, why did it happen, asking those types of questions. And again, my pediatrician, in his wisdom, said, you can spend your time trying to figure out why it happened, or you can spend your time figuring out what to do with it. And so we concentrated very much on what to do with it, what do we do now. But still, you go through the issue of with the church and the comforting comments that come out and the platitudes about what a blessing it is to have a special child and what wonderful chosen people you are that you had this opportunity for this special person, that you had the strength to do this. And I just would always say, I'll trade you. There's also the issue of guilt and sin. Is this a consequence that I brought upon myself by something that I did, whether physically or, you know, sinfully or whatever? And even the scripture that hit me most strongly at that time, that I'll sort of paraphrase right now, that the sins of the fathers will be visited upon the heads of the children for generation upon generation, which always hurt me greatly then, but I kept, you know, I went way back. You know, is this really a punishment for sin of some point? But again, my pediatrician came back to, you know, that's not really a useful exercise. It's just, what do we do now? What's practical? What are you going to do with it? So the recommendations that I sort of gleaned again of what the community support can do for the parents and the families in this situation. Number one, remember that the parent is an individual. They are more than the role that they are in having a special needs child or even a parent themselves. These are kind of global recommendations that work for any situation. Sincerely asking, how are you? And really caring. I learned at that time to really pause after I heard that question, how are you? To see if the person really wanted to know. And you do know who really genuinely cares. And that knowing what you're saying to someone, how are you, and being it. So sincerity just goes a long, long way. Respite care, even if it's 15 minutes, to have somebody drop by and just take over for a little bit of time, to be able to help wherever they can. I keep coming back to this respite care. It was a social program when my child was young that was experimental, that has since lost its funding. And I've advocated with the legislature that respite care makes a tremendous difference for these parents and these families. Small deeds are very, very meaningful. If you drop a line to someone, I had a friend give me a subscription to the Exponent 2 at this time. Just some little thing that happens that really do make a big difference, but recognizing that the parents are individuals and they are still full people beyond this particular role that they have. Remember that the child is an individual. This child is more than their syndrome, more than the situation that they are in and their disability. Talk to them with respect. Don't pretend that they're not there. Don't pretend that there's nothing wrong with them. They are people too. And so whatever their situation, about the only response that my son could give was love, was a smile. But he knew who really cared, and that acknowledging of him, and also other children, no matter what their disability level, acknowledge them as people and their situations. Remember their siblings. The siblings also are individuals. There's a lot of strain in that family that they have responsibilities for. So letting them be their own themselves, carry on with their personal progress, their experiences in church, their sports activities. Remember them that they are more than their role as a sibling of someone with special needs. This is a real tremendous strength that the church offers to families, to children especially, that they have the opportunity to interact with a number of different adults of different ages and different abilities and different situations. And that community of the church is tremendously helpful to the whole family if that community gathers around them. Live in the now. The past is where you're asking about why did this happen and why is all this. That's living in the past. Living in the future is all the platitudes of what rewards you're going to get in the heaven because you've done such a good job with these children. Or this, you get a chance to raise this child in the hereafter. That's living in the future. That doesn't help me either. It's just how do I deal with it right now? What do I do with it now? Part of living in the now is the recognition that the situation is forever. When you have a child, you have an expectation that if you do a good job, you raise them up, they become responsible adults, and you pass them off, you've worked yourself out of a job. With a disabled child, you realize this child is your child forever. And that is a strain that people deal with. Myself, my son passed away at about age 8, and so I dealt with the issue of relief that it really isn't forever, and guilt that I'm relieved that I don't have it forever. So it's a real double-edged sword at that point. Indeed, again, back to the church. What is the purpose of going to church? As I said, my son's developmental level was about 3 to 6 months old. Well, there's no real benefit that the child himself gets from that being at church other than a feeling of the Spirit. So why do I, as a parent, why did I go to church or take him with me? And I had some non-support from my husband as I would, you know, get this child dressed and get him over to the church and sit with him all this time because it was a little awkward. He said, why do you do that? He doesn't get anything out of this. But what did I go to church for and what was the purpose of church? It is a worship time. Only been 22 years. You see, I get emotional. It's a time to be in the company of the Spirit and the saints. And that was an important thing about being a church. It's also a quiet time. As everyone mentioned here, how busy a person, a parent, is with a disabled child. It's an opportunity to just sit and not have to do anything else. It's an incredible blessing. That time to be able to just hold him and caress. So I thoroughly enjoy or appreciate the parents that I see in church who are touching and hugging and caressing their children, and it's a wonderful experience. I think as a church we need to modify that and see exactly how to put it, but it was a tremendously helpful thing to me, so that the quiet time to just have the affection and be with them. If you are then the other person, knowing this parent, again, asking genuinely, how can I help? It's not an assumption, don't ignore them, but asking, how can you help, whether it's helping with another child, holding that child, whatever they need. Recognizing that having a disabled child places a tremendous stress on a marriage. There is a high incidence of divorce in families where there is a disabled child, so giving support to the couple in the family. Once again, I'll come back to respite care. Just be there occasionally, and this is usually what visiting teachers do, home teachers can do, friends, whatever. Just drop in, take over for half an hour, let them have a little bit of time, recognizing that that is a tremendous stress. The two things that I learned very dramatically that are tremendous helps in the church that anyone can do is the power of prayer. Prayer for someone else. And also the reality of guardian angels. I learned after my son's death of a man in the neighborhood who had been a guardian angel. I had not had close personal contact with him. He had not been deeply involved in our family. But learning, and not even learning, it was a knowing that he had extended his own life to watch over my son. And anyone can be a guardian angel and can pray for others. And I am thankful for those who gave the support to me as a parent of special needs child and of my other children whose special needs are less visible. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Jenny Grossman from Phoenix, Arizona. And I'm also here to do a panel on the latest novel that I wrote for Covenant. But when I saw this panel, I put myself on it because it's very important to me to speak out about what the experience of raising a special needs child was for me in the LDS Church. 28 years ago, I gave birth to a beautiful baby who grew up into an impish little boy with mountains of white curls and an infectious belly laugh. His father and I named him Zachary, which means God hath remembered. He knew his alphabet at 20 months and read his first words before the age of 2. At 5, he manned a lemonade stand to raise money to help restore the Statue of Liberty. He wrote brilliant stories by the time he was 6. At 7, he campaigned for animal rights. I remember my embarrassment standing next to him holding a hand-lettered sign proclaiming, "Just say no to fur," in front of my favorite department store. At 8, Zach protested against apartheid and had me make him a little African kufi hat that he wore to show his support for the downtrodden black citizens of South Africa. Zach had a soft spot for sea turtles. The sight of a bunch of helium balloons floating loosely in the sky once made him cry tears of sorrow because he worried that the balloons would land in the ocean and the turtles would eat them and die. And this little boy was born with a hole in his spine. All the nerves that should have been tucked neatly inside his vertebrae instead protruded from it in a tangled mass on the day he was born. His birth defect is known as spina bifida. One out of every 1,000 babies is born with this condition. Today, there are 70,000 Americans with spina bifida. No one knows what the future holds for them because they are the first generation of people with spina bifida to live beyond childhood. I've never seen Zach walk or run. 2 silicone valves shunt his cerebrospinal fluid down to his abdomen because his spine is incomplete and can't do its normal job. 5 times a day, he has to insert a catheter into his bladder to empty it. He used crutches as a child, and at the age of 28 now, he uses a wheelchair to get around. He cannot drive a car because of perception problems, and he has learning disabilities in math. I drove 12 hours from Phoenix, Arizona to tell you Zach's story and to make it a part of the Sunstone Archives with the hope that someone in authority will try to understand how the church can affect one human soul and the souls of the people who love him in the most devastating way imaginable. Here's my story. My husband and I are converts to the church. After we had our two children, we began to search for a church community. We studied both Eastern and Western religions in the hope of finding the strongest doctrine and teaching of God's love we could possibly find. When the missionaries taught us about the LDS Church some 25 years ago, one of them made a statement that impressed us very much. The missionary said, "Our church believes that those born with physical disabilities were once valiant spirits in the pre-existence." Yes, the missionaries continued in a later lesson, "another wonderful thing about the priesthood of our church is that it has the sole authority on earth to heal in the name of Jesus Christ. Just as the disciples were authorized to heal in Christ's name, we too can heal people because he is the head of our church." Spina bifida is always accompanied by all sorts of complications, numerous dangerous surgeries, and a host of secondary disabilities and illnesses. We were certainly going to need Christ's priesthood to help us deal with all of it. And what a better faith community than one that would regard Zach not as a disabled or defective child, but as a valiant, choice spirit who was here to teach us spiritual lessons and help us perfect ourselves in God's only authorized kingdom on the earth today. After about a year in the church, when Zach was about 4 and our daughter was 2, Zach developed a continuing headache, possibly caused by the malfunction of the 2 shunts in his brain. It looked like he would have to have another brain surgery. I asked my visiting teacher, the wife of a chiropractor, if she thought I should ask for a blessing. She said, "Of course. And while you're at it, why not ask that Zach be completely